Coming up on today's edition of Locked On Eagles, we continue our What If series. What if DeSean Jackson didn't get a shoestring tackle in the 2010 wildcard playoff round against the Green Bay Packers? And we dive into Miles Sanders' comments yesterday. Does he need more opportunities, more in 2022? That's coming up on today's edition of Locked On Eagles.
Are Locked On Eagles, your daily Philadelphia Eagles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We thank you so much for making Locked On Eagles your first listen each and every day. Welcome in, Eagles fans, to a Friday edition of LOE. I'm Louis DiBiase. He's Gino Camilleri. We've been your daily Philadelphia Eagles podcast and the most Italian Philadelphia Eagles podcast now for the last 4 years. You can find us on all podcast platforms in video form as well on YouTube and hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Birds, at DiBiase, LOE, and at GC24_football. Gino, happy 900th episode together, my friend. This is our 900th show recording since 2018. Pretty crazy that we only are 100 away from 1,000, man. Let's keep it rolling.
On my Snapchat the other day came up a memory from 4 years ago where we were going down to the Jersey Shore and we randomly went into a mall and Nick Foles was doing a book signing there. And that was before you and I even did one episode together. And that's the craziest part to me is that we've done 900 episodes post Super Bowl era. Got the shirt on for it, of course. And I didn't believe I would do one episode of a podcast ever in my life, let alone 100 or 200. Yeah. We're close to 1,000 at this point. And by the end of 2022, we'll be well over 1,000 episodes. And we would have absolutely no listeners or no support if it wasn't for the Locked On Podcast Network and everybody who tunes in each and every day and has followed us for 4 years. I know, especially in Philadelphia, there is a ton of different outlets that you can listen
to. Top five market, man.
It says a lot to all of our listeners that you take the time to listen to our show for, man, 900 episodes
together,
man. Best
fans in the world, man. Whew, best fans in the world. And it is funny that you had never podcasted before the show, right?
Nope.
I mean, was this the first time? And of course, joining a daily podcast network, trial by fire, baby. And it worked out well and we're going strong. And yeah, we appreciate all our listeners to keep us going here as we head into season five. And, you know, season five's hopefully going to be a big one. And this offense looks really exciting on paper. It's young, it's promising through the air, on the ground. And Gino, a big part of that last year, and he's going to be a big part of it this year. Who knows about the future after 2022, but it's Miles Sanders. And before we get into our What If series, we continue that with round two today, talking about DeSean Jackson, the Eagles against the Packers in the 2010 playoffs. I'm sure listeners know where we're going with that one. Miles Sanders talked yesterday in an interview, and of course, me and you hit on it a couple days ago about the All-Star comments, right? But it was more than just that that Sanders talked about. He talked about the opportunity for him heading into a contract season, what is expected of him, and how he's going to really get that next big deal, if there really even is a big deal anymore for a running back. In terms of running backs, a big deal. Mm-hmm. Just in general, getting a contract extension. It's hard for a lot of running backs, most running backs, honestly, to get a nice big second contract. And so for Sanders, he talked a lot about being more consistent, but then, you know, he kind of twisted it really quick and said that he also just needs, he said he's going to be frank about it, he just needs more opportunities. And I don't know if either thing he said is correct. I think, number one, he has always been a consistently good runner. Since 2019, he has the third most yards per carry, only behind Nick Chubb. And then I'm drawing a blank on the second star running back ahead of him. I think he's always been good when he's on the field. And I think opportunities last year in the second half of the season were there. I think the issue is, most of the time, is when there's not opportunities because he's not on the field because he's injured. I think injuries is the thing that holds back Sanders more than anything.
The best availability is reliability, and you're 100% right. At the running back position, especially in Philadelphia, where you're really not going to get 30 carries a game anymore. They're never going to shove the ball down the gut of a running back, especially with Jalen Hurts there. It would be a you wouldn't utilize your resources to the best of your ability if you gave running backs 30 carries in today's NFL with who you have back there. You have an explosive runner in Jalen Hurts. You have multiple explosive pass catchers. You have to be efficient. And I think that's the one thing with Miles is that I see what he's saying. He needs more opportunity to get into the flow of games and really get his feet under him. But the thing is, when you break off those 75-yard runs, those big-time gains, you don't really need a ton of opportunities. I really think it comes down to refining the vision in his game. I would say that's the one part of his game that he needs to continue to get better on, because even in last year, there's times where you're saying, why didn't he hit that hole there?
Yeah. Like,
why did he bounce that outside?
But then the second half, I thought he did grow in that area.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You're right, though. Like, it's the big runs he pulls off. It's the involvement in the receiving game. It's the injuries that, and just in general, like you said, running backs don't get 30 plus carries anymore.
No.
And last year was the year to get opportunities, right? Because the Eagles are going to want to throw more this year. So if you want opportunities, you need to stay on the football field. So, and you know, like, again, opportunities were there last year. If this was a comment that was made in October of 2021, I would totally agree.
Right.
Sanders was not used enough in the first half of the season. But when it comes to the five games in the second half of the year where he wasn't hurt, three of those five games, he had at least 16 carries. He had 24 in one game, 18 in another, 16 in the other, and at least 19 total touches when you add receptions in three of those five games. And the other two games, he was pretty involved as well. So in the modern day NFL, like, that's as much as you're going to get, man. And so I don't know. I think both things he said, like, consistency has always been there and the opportunity is what it's going to be. If anything, it's going to be less than last year. You got to stay more efficient and stay on the field if you want the total touches over the year to help you get that next deal, which, again, I don't think his market's going to change anyway, Gino, with a huge breakout year. I think it's not going to fluctuate all that much. If he stays healthy, it could help a little bit, but overall, the running back market is set at what it is.
Especially after the whole Christian McCaffrey ordeal. And if you're looking at people who you should comp a player like Miles Sanders to, it would be a player like McCaffrey, both on and off the field. Christian McCaffrey, when he's there, he's an excellent player. Somebody with the ball in his hands is going to be a top-notch player. Same with Miles Sanders. But Lou, the reliability element, not always being secure with the football, he still has fumbling issues at times. Something that you saw with LeSean McCoy early on definitely went away from his game. Miles Sanders, there's still aspects to his game where we were talking about when he was drafted, he was still very raw. There are areas he's come a long way, but there are still areas that within his own game he needs to look at and say, in this contract year, if I'm going to get money either in Philadelphia or elsewhere, I think it has to be the efficiency. That's the one area with Miles that I think has to get better. You're not going to get games with 20 to 25 carries. You talked about that stretch at the end there where the running game was more their MO than the passing game was. He didn't touch 30 one time. So what do you expect, especially when Kenny Gainwell was the more efficient runner inside of the tackles?
If you want more opportunities in the receiving game, you got to catch the football. I think he was great at that in 2019, but he struggled with that over the last 2 years.
Yeah,
but again, I'm not
gone downhill.
Yeah, and my issue is with Miles Sanders. It has nothing really to do with him. It's really more just his position and what he's asking for, because Sanders has been a great piece of your offense. I mean, he's one of only 10 running backs in NFL history to rush for 700 or more yards with at least a 4.5 yards per carry average in his first three seasons. So, like, this is a very good football player, but you know, you're not going to get more opportunities unless you stay healthy. If anything, it's going to be less. And again, especially if you want to deal with the Eagles, a breakout year might actually hurt your chances of staying in Philadelphia. Overall, no matter what he does, Gino, this year, unless he just bombs out and only plays three games or he's horrible, it's not going to dictate his market by, you know, $5,000+ annually. It could change a little bit. If he plays all 16 games, it might go up a little bit and he could find a big deal maybe elsewhere. But overall, I think Sanders, it'll be interesting to see what the market is for him next year. And I think the Eagles will want him back. I do too. He's a great do-it-all weapon that I think in 2018, that's all we talked about in this podcast during the draft season, in 2019 as well. But it'll be, the Eagles will be very disciplined with that contract. Unlike Mailata, Josh Sweat, you know, last year, a lot of the players that needed deals that were on more important positions.
You look back to the last time that a running back has gotten a big contract in Philadelphia, LeSean McCoy, man. I mean, it's been a long time. And before that, it was Westbrook. They don't pay they didn't pay Deuce Staley. They let him walk. It's been the MO for not just the last five or so years. It's been that way for several years. Unless you're the elite of the elite, which I would say in terms of Brian Westbrook and his play in Philadelphia was up there in the upper echelon of the NFL. Same with LeSean McCoy. Miles Sanders is there, but you got to be on the field, and you also have to be the top of the top to garner that type of money in Philadelphia. And that's what it comes down to. You have to look at the player and you have to look at the team. What have they done at that position in the past? They've gone out, they've taken all their outlets where they're drafting guys in the fourth, fifth round, even undrafted free agent territory. They're bringing in guys like LeGarrette Blount, Jay Ajayis, who were on their last leg to see if they could get a bit out of them. Even Jordan Howard, who last year was maybe a better runner at times than Miles was in a little bit of the action during that season. So are they going to pay him $10-plus million a year? I don't think so. Absolutely not.
Well, and do you know how many running backs honestly even get that? I mean, that's the thing.
Like, he's not going to get more than a guy like Aaron Jones. He's not going to get more than a guy like Christian McCaffrey. Does he think he's going to get paid that? I believe he does with everything that he's saying. But when you look at the curve of returns on paying a running back that much, the Eagles never even touched that territory. And they won't, they've done the last couple of years.
There's a good amount of running backs that do get 12-plus annually. Aaron Jones, Joe Mixon, Derrick Henry, Delvin Cook, McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, Zeke. So, yeah, I mean, you could get a little more than that.
He's not getting that.
Not in Philly. That's the thing, Gino. That's why I go back and forth running back all the time, because I know you can replace a lot of that production by at least 70% with a Kenny Gainwell in the fourth round and a Boston Scott and a Jordan Howard combined. We saw it last year. But also, when you spend a second-round pick on a guy, you want at least you would hope there's a second deal there. And you know, what is a big contract for a running back nowadays? It's kind of pennies on the dollar compared to other positions. So, you know, if you can get Sanders for $7 to $8 million, some people will be like, no, don't pay that at all. Just replace him with a guy on a rookie deal. But it's just such a tough spot, because it is also a bargain, even just in the sense of the overall roster. It's not a bargain for running backs, but it's a tough discussion. I'm very fascinated to see what the Eagles do with Sanders next year. I'm really okay with either, as long as they're not paying him, you know, north of $12 million. So it'll be interesting, definitely, in 2022. Big year coming up for Sanders and the offense as a whole. One of the most exciting offenses, Gino, this team has had on paper in a long time. And one of those offenses was of the shirt I'm wearing right now, the 2010 NFC East Division champions, Michael Vick, LeSean McCoy, Jeremy Maclin, DeSean Jackson, a 10-6 team that won the division. And Gino, they blew a Tuesday night game against Joe Webb and the Vikings, so they didn't get a home field advantage bye week as a top two seed. So they had to play the Green Bay Packers. And something that happened at the end has always made a lot of fans think, what could have been? What if? What if DeSean Jackson, with a minute 37 left, did not get tackled by Desmond Bishop on a shoestring tackle? Could things have gone a little bit differently in what was a devastating game for me? Maybe not as much other fans. We'll get into that coming up next right here on Locked On Eagles. And guys, today's show is sponsored by Bet Online. It's the official sports book of the Locked On Podcast Network. Bet Online is the easiest and the most reliable way to bet on all the sports throughout the year. You know, of course, the NHL just ended. Right now, you've only really got the Major League Baseball, but you can bet on the MLB. You can bet on, you know, soccer when it comes back, the MMA. You've got golf, boxing, the NFL futures. The NBA right now is absolute chaos. Rudy Gobert just got traded for like 500 first-round picks to the Minnesota Timberwolves. You can bet on futures in the NBA, where players are going to end up. It's all at betonline.net. They're your fastest and easiest way to check on all your favorite sports. Head over to the website today, or you can use your mobile device as well, betonline.net, to learn more about the trends in action, because BetOnline is where the game starts. All right, Eagles fans, welcome back into this Friday edition of Locked On Eagles. Thank you so much for making LOE your first listen each and every day. It's round two of our What If series. We started this in 2020, peak pandemic season. There was really nothing to talk about, so we went back in time and said, some of the biggest moments in Eagles history, what if they went differently? We hit on a lot of those main ones in 2020. Like, of course, one of the biggest recent ones is, what if Alshon Jeffrey didn't drop that pass in New Orleans, right? What if Carson Wentz didn't tear his ACL? What if Terrell Owens didn't leave? You know, we got into what the 90s what ifs in general. And then yesterday, I had Vince Quinn, formerly of Sports Radio 94 WIP, join me to talk about, what if Russell Wilson – waived his no trade clause for the Eagles this past offseason. You can find that podcast on all platforms. Gino, today I want to talk about one of my most beloved teams in Eagles history, that 2010 squad. This game probably sticks with me more than most. I'm a younger Eagles fan. I really missed out on really feeling those NFC title losses, the 90s disappointments, right? So losing in the wild card for some people, a team too heading in 2010, they had a brand new starter in Kevin Cobb. You know, they weren't really seen as a Super Bowl contender. They were riding the magic of expected backup yet again in Michael Vick. Mm-hmm. So 2010 for a lot of people might not really be all that devastating. It was for me, though. That team was everything I loved about football. And I think, you know, the way they lost that game against the Packers, people don't really, I don't think, remember how close the Eagles were to maybe pulling that game off, right? The score is 21-16. There's a minute 37 left in the fourth quarter. The Eagles just made a big stop on third down. Keenan Clayton actually sacked Aaron Rodgers to force a punt. And the first snap,
much as you talk bad about that linebacking unit, yeah, I remember that came up big, clear as day, man.
Keenan Clayton,
yeah, undersized. He was an undersized gem for a little bit.
The rookie year out of Oklahoma, it was actually cool. I rewatched that game today throughout the afternoon, and it was funny too because that was the year of the miracle in the New Meadowlands, and DeSean Jackson was back there waiting for that punt. It was kind of a cool moment that I didn't really remember, where the crowd was going crazy before the snap. Jackson's doing the whole bring it hands again like he did at the Meadowlands. But it ended in disappointment. That first snap, Vic hits Jackson over the middle for 5 yards. He breaks a tackle, and Gino, he's got nothing but daylight. Jackson had two guys to beat. He makes the one miss, and all he had was Desmond Bishop, who dives at his feet and trips him to the ground. And then, of course, we know what happened after. Michael Vick goes on to underthrow Riley Cooper 4 plays later, and Tremaine Williams ends up picking that game off, devastating a 13-year-old Lou DiBiase. Gino, I think back to that because if he does not get tripped up there, he is scoring. And then you're up 23-21 with like only 40 seconds left. That's one of those teams that I wanted to win so badly. Maybe they weren't like one of the teams that got away that should have won a title, but that team is, if I can go back and pick one team to win a title in Eagles history, it's the 2010 squad.
And they started slow too. They were a team that you didn't really know what you were going to get out of that squad coming off the end of the Donovan McNabb era. A lot of us thought that that 2008 NFC championship game was really going to be it. And 2009 goes down in just an ugly fashion, losing to Dallas 3 different times.
The McNabb air guitar game. Good Lord.
Yeah, don't ever bring that up.
One of the cringiest moments in franchise history.
First year in Jerry World, too. Like, that was the first image we got of them walking out of that tunnel. And after that, McNabb's out of town. You're saying, what's next? And here comes through the middle of the year, a Michael Vick team, which starts to get rejuvenated. They start to get hot under the hands of DeSean Jackson and the first really good years of that young core that they had together, which would go on to be so good before Chip Kelly came and ruined it. That was that first step where you're saying this team has life. And being an Eagles fan for how long, you always say ride the season as it goes, the Jeff Garcia year, the 2008 year, and then 2010 really felt that way as well, where you're just riding that moment and taking in what would become a potential game against the team that would go on to win the Super Bowl. And you almost had Green Bay in your hands with that DeSean Jackson run that was so, I would say, reminiscent to that Dallas run that he had. I think it was the year before that where it just get it out of your hands quick.
Oh, it was the same year, the 91-yard touchdown where he falls.
Okay, it was the same year. Yep, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep, the 91-yard run where you're saying if he just gets it in space, he's the most electric player in the league.
Great point.
Tyreek Hill at that point. That's what you were saying. Get the ball in this guy's hands. He's going to make anybody miss in space. They go on, they make that tackle. Then it wasn't over yet, Lou. He hits Riley Cooper on that pattern on the same
third
play.
Third and nine. Yeah, to move the chains.
The same play he would go and throw an interception on, the very same play, the exact same route. He would go and hit him on third down, and then the next play is a first down, and Mike Vick throws an interception. But they were that close to beating that team where they would go on and they would have played that Chicago team, which I thought they could beat. It was a Jay Cutler team, which was very good at the time, but the Eagles were on fire. They had a ton of athleticism. You talk about one of the quickest teams in Eagles history, a team
in
that
NFL
was,
history, man.
Yeah, before their time in terms of athleticism, that 2010 team was going to outrun anybody. And what it came down to and how ironic that season ended, was throwing an underthrown football to the slowest of all your playmakers in Riley Cooper when you have all this speed and it almost puts you back in this game. Yeah. And that's what's let you down. That game, Lou, I cried. I've cried at most
too,
games after him, but that one was like, you could see how special that team was. Same with the 08 team where like that run was coming to a head and everything just, if it went right, those bounces that went right in 17, they went right in 2010. I thought anything could have happened that year with that team.
It was one of the first gut punches of my early fandom.
Absolutely.
You know, kind of the same deflating feeling of, you know, because like you said, they were driving down the field and Vic made a big play and Vic had a banged up ankle. He was
hurting. They were hitting everything.
Yeah. He hits a dart to Cooper on 3rd and 9 to move the chains and they're on the opposing 28 at that point. You're like, oh my gosh, this might actually happen. Like they're going to come back and pull this off and win this football game. And that's the worst feeling is when they're getting all the way down there and they don't finish the job. Kind of like 2018, you know, the Eagles were all the way down in Saints territory and Alshon dropped the pass. That was very similar here. And when you're a 13-year-old hothead like I was, man, that loved that football team, devastation. The tears were definitely there. And I just remember that play because, again, if he beats Bishop, he's got, Williams is on the left side still. He's in front of him, but Macklin has him blocked on the outside. And as you mentioned, I didn't even think of that 91-yard play against Dallas. That was the exact perfect example of what would have happened. Mm. He had 90% of the field was to the right of him, and there wasn't anybody on the right-hand side. Like,
exactly.
He's gone. And then the question, I guess, is, like, do they still win it? I mean, they're up 23-21 at that point with, like, 40 seconds to go. Mm-hmm. We know how Aaron Rodgers is in those moments, i.e. Dallas 2016. But the Eagles did only hold him to 7 points in that half, and he only had 180 passing yards. Remember, James Starks, the former University of Buffalo running back, was who was kicking the Eagles' defense. Yeah, over 120 yards. So they could have pulled that off and won that game. And like you said, I mean, you play maybe you're in Soldier Field the week after, and then you might play the one seed Atlanta Falcons, who would have probably beat Matt Hasselbeck and the Seahawks the following week. And yeah, I'm not saying like this was a given, like they were winning the Super Bowl if they win that game kind of thing, but Gino, like that just, it kind of, the dominoes fell. I mean, that was the champ that you had to get through. If you get through them, you're playing with house money.
Here's a question.
Yeah.
Alshon, Deshaun, what team did you have more confidence if they were to have won in that moment?
Gino, I literally wrote that down.
Okay, all right. I'm reading your mind.
That is such a great question. No, I wrote the exact thing. I'm like, if you had to pick one team, if you can change one of those
2010.
Two plays.
I think 2010 by far.
You think they would have a better chance to win the Super Bowl if Jackson pulls that off instead of Alshon?
Because you beat the champs. New Orleans doesn't go to win that game, and they almost lost that game against a team that was so depleted at that time. And I thought that would have been like that last everything went right moment for them after 17. Everything went right. 18, you could have won that game, but I think you weren't going to go into that next game and make too much.
It's funny
noise,
you mentioned that
think.
Question, man.
But
I thought that exact thing.
I think 2010 was just such a good offense that on any given Sunday, if things went right for them, things were clicking on all cylinders for them towards the end of the year. I really believe that they could have got hot. Like with that 18 team, you're winning games that are more about the defense than anything. I mean, outside of the Houston. No, it really was the offense down the stretch, pardon me. But, I mean, I think with Michael Vick, LeSean, what he was, Jeremy, and Deshaun, that team was everything that future NFL teams would go on to be. Where that 18 team was on its way down a little bit to be the implosion of what would be the 2 years to follow.
Yeah, the 2010 team was more talented. Honestly, I'd probably go 2018 just because they had done it before. That team was just riding this magical run again. It just felt like it was all coming together again. They had beaten the Rams already in LA. The Patriots were just not a good offense at all in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I think the Eagles beat the Patriots if they can get by LA. I guess it's more, do you believe the Eagles could have got through LA and the Patriots rather than the 2010 team getting through Soldier Field, Chicago, Atlanta, and then Pittsburgh? Well, I would probably say the 2018 team, but
let's go down this
list.
Your
points are good too. Yeah.
After the bye week in week 8 of 2010, they would score 26 points against Indy, 59 yeah. against Washington, 27 against the Giants. They lost to Chicago where they scored 26. They beat Houston 34-24, beat Dallas 30-27, beat the Giants 38-31. Then they would lose the next two games, only scoring 27 points combined. So if I were to look at the height of those two teams, those two offenses, and to regress back to the mean, I would say that on any given day, I think that 2010 team could have outscored any team in the NFL at that point. Did I think about that in 2018? 2017, I definitely did. I didn't have that confidence in 2018, and that's what makes me hesitant to pick that team.
I get that. I think the Vic injury would have been something to take into account, 100%. Too, if he was limping with that ankle. It depends on how he was the next week.
At that time, too.
Yeah, the Eagles' 2018 defense was way better. It was red hot. The defensive line, that was Fletcher Cox's best year of his career, I think. So, yeah, it's close, man. Again, in the experience and the path for 2018 is why I probably leaned that team, but... Yeah, it's so funny you mentioned that question. That was literally what I wanted to wrap up.
It'd be an interesting debate to go 11 by 11.
I'm offense, definitely going to hit up our listeners on Twitter after that and ask.
Yeah, and just see who they would pick. Like, if you could combine those two teams, like talent wise, who do you think would have made it out of there? I think it's a very interesting discussion with two very similar stories where it's on the backup quarterback and it comes down to your star wide receiver who made so many plays in moments past. Being a margin, and that's why the NFL is great, Lou, because in 17, the margins were in their favor. The Corey Clement pass that just on the tip of his fingers almost could be called back incomplete. Green Bay had all the things going their way in 2010, Lou. The Eagles just didn't have the bounces that year.
Well, and Gino, think about it, too. If they win that game, I mean, losing that game motivated Howie Roseman to build the team to beat the Green Bay Packers.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Does the dream team happen at that point if you beat Green Bay? I'm not so sure. Maybe Andy Reid stays. I mean, there's a whole new rabbit hole of things that could happen. So it's fascinating. Real quick, too, before we wrap up, what if I threw into that question you asked with 2010 versus 2018? Another like big what if. Let's say the fog doesn't roll in 1988. Is that Eagles team winning a championship more than the other two teams we brought up? Like, of those three teams, who are you picking with the best chance to win a title? Because the 88
team. I mean, that team's good, man. Yeah, it's hard to look past how good that team was defensively as well. And
there's a lot of those teams, man.
That's why I always say in this league, like, everything just like comes full circle to an extent. And sometimes you get the outliers which break outside of that circle, like 17. I mean, they were so close so many times through the early 2000s. Those teams with Ron Jaworski, and you talk about the 88 team as well. And then you get the stories that things do go well, and it's only happened a few times. But the similarities between multiple decades and multiple teams and multiple coaching staff, I don't know, because I'm not as versed in all of the other teams around the league in terms of their history. There's just something in Philadelphia when it comes to just that Hollywood story arc for multiple different seasons.
Every time, you know, that's what I've noticed. I've noticed that as an Eagles fan, when you don't expect them to, that's when they do it. And when you expect them to, it's when they don't do it. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, that hasn't always been the way it is. They were favorites year after year in the early 2000s, and they actually pulled them off. But I've noticed it in my lifetime pretty much as an actual coherent sports fan in the 2010s. Anytime there was hype in the offseason, they did not exceed expectations. And then every time there were no expectations, like 2021 this year, I didn't think they were going to make the playoffs. They made the playoffs. 2017, I thought they were going to be a 9-win team. They won a title. I thought they were going to win a title in 2019. And we saw what happened. They only got to the wild card round. So, yeah, you're right. Maybe that's just how Philadelphia Eagles football is played. That just might be our destiny. But it's fun, man. And it's a great podcast on that team. Yeah, yeah. Maybe that's the theme. So, Miles Sanders, don't give us any more labels for the rest of the offseason. Thank you very much. But
this team, it's going to be fun. And I think you can look at this 2022 team to be what would become of that 2011 team where you're saying you just got to the playoffs, you lose in the first round. Are we going to build it the right way, or are we going to let history repeat itself? I don't think they're going down that avenue. I think the tag that Miles Sanders put on them was more out of confidence. And I do believe in this team, but I'm not going to go and say they're going to win a Super Bowl. I'm not going to say they're even going to win in the first round of the playoffs. But I'm saying that right now, unlike a lot of those teams, they have compiled on paper one of the best 53-man rosters I can remember in Philadelphia when it comes to the top end, when it comes to depth, and when it comes to overall, how is it going to compete in the modern landscape of the NFL? I'd say much like that 2010 team, they're going to be fast, they're going to be quick, and they're going to be electric and fun to watch on Sundays. That I guarantee, even if you're not an Eagles fan, you have watched the highlights of that outing against Washington where they scored 59 points.
Oh, yeah. I have a plaque of all the stats of that game right above my computer.
You don't even have to be an Eagles fan, and you have seen the highlights to that game. You've seen the highlights of the Miracle in the Meadowlands.
Want to hear how young I am, Eagles fans? I had to sneak down. I had to go to bed at halftime for school, and I snuck down to watch the rest of that massacre. That's how young I am. So when you come at me on Twitter later and be like, that's the heartbreak moment of your childhood, yes, that is correct. But yeah, can't wait, man. 25 days until training camp. Let's get this thing going. Make sure you guys subscribe to the podcast wherever you get the show, on all platforms, video form as well on YouTube. We hit 1,000 subscribers. Thanks so much, guys. We want to continue to grow that. We've got exclusive video content on our channel as well. And then we're always talking birds on Twitter, at LockedOnBirds, at GC24_football, and at DBiaseLOE. Thanks so much for tuning into today's edition of Locked On Eagles. Make sure your second listen of the day is the Locked On NFL podcast, all the news across the league in under 30 minutes. As always, for Gino Camilleri, I'm Lou DiBiase signing off. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening and watching. And let's go, Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.